Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tyndall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along to GBR Breakdown, episode 3. I think probably this might be the show that we tried to do in the second half of last week. But before we get into, I suppose, dust panning and brushing up the remnants of English rugby, welcome home.
Hello, guys.
How are
you? Gosh, it's good to be back.
We have genuinely missed you.
We have. You know, I've missed you like, you know, when you... Once a year, you get to catch up with those people and you really get excited about it, then you hope you never see them again for another year. That's just how I'm feeling right now.
I described us as a stool with only two legs while he was away. I thought that was quite nice.
I thought you were just saying we were shit.
Yeah, what sort of stool?
We're a stool.
I'm going to see Westerlands.
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we do a little debrief on your time in the jungle on this week's lock-in?
Yes.
And lovely. Shall we therefore, I think, get into the state of English rugby right now? Because... we have obviously done a couple of shows last week, one of which was on the return of Warren Gatland into Wales. The second of which was a point of view that we tried to offer in the interest of balance, and lots of people had a lot to say about that. But I think what we were trying to do was, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I reckon 85 to 90% of the press coverage in the build-up to Eddie Jones sacking was get rid of Eddie. And what we tried to do was a show that just said, hang on, here are some of the reasons why it might be worth keeping him. And I'll explain a little bit more about where we ended up and why we only did one side of the story in a moment or two. But welcome back. Straight from the hot seat. I mean, Eddie Jones in England.
I got
right
out.
Decision.
Got out, found out the Roses didn't win. I found out we were having a shocker in the autumn international. So, yeah, I've been trying to catch up with it all. I got asked when I was at the races on Friday about it. And I completely understand why he's gone. Like, if, fundamentally, you can't be getting booed by your home fans on the last game of a four-game series at Twickenham when you're coming off a two-game win in the Six Nations before, even though you've got a couple of wins in the summer. And listening to the show that you put out Tuesday was with Pemby.
David Pembroke, yeah.
He was a bigger fan of Eddie than Ask was. And it's, you know, and he was like, he's never been so open. Like, I don't read much media anymore. I don't, because it can be stale and it can be distorted, whether for whatever reason. We did a show with Alex Spink about it and we tried to drill down why they don't like him, and they say, well, it's not that we don't like him, that he doesn't deliver this. And then you've got Pemby going, hey, he puts himself up for more interviews than any other coach, puts players up. But I still don't really know. I would say I don't know any of the young players that are in that England team, and I don't read the press, so I'm just going, how much am I seeing them? All I'm seeing is headlines about Eddie Jones. Yes, he might be going there, but he's not giving the press, whether he likes it or not, what they need, or they wouldn't turn on him. Yes, you can say, you can hide behind the results, 78%, 73%. And by the way, I said on TV that I think it's wrong to get rid of him this far out. He's clearly a fantastic coach. Got no issues around that. But then there's also got to be the balance of, I can understand why he's gone. A, the booing. B, the constant change of players, 40-odd players through the Six Nations. We only win two games. If you take the top five teams in the world right now, we've got at best a 50-50 win ratio against them. And with that draw against New Zealand, that takes you down to 33%. We won one out of three. So you can manipulate numbers. You know, Pemby said that he had a 90% win ratio at the Rugby World Cup. Yeah, that's 2019.
I think that's over all of the Rugby World Cups. So that's 03, 07.
Oh, that's all his.
That's all four Rugby World Cups. Okay. So he's been to four World Cups and he's a 90.
But then obviously he's taking in South Africa when he was a consultant. So, he's, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And it's going to be South Africa against Namibia and England against Uruguay.
But this is the point. Is I'm not saying that he isn't a good coach, because he fundamentally is. But when you've lost journalists, then you lose the fans to a point where they're booing you. And I've said for a year, since the autumn last year, that they're not creating anything. They're not looking like scoring, which is a big issue for me. And, you know, I understand it. But I do believe whenever he's at his lowest, the next thing he comes back and delivers.
Yep.
So, and then you add in the financial, what they're going to have to pay him, what they're going to have to pay the other coaches if they all leave, what they're going to have to pay to bring in the coaches that they're looking at bringing in. I don't understand why you would have done it. You know, he's working to a plan. Obviously, he hasn't delivered on that 80%. But you know, for what you're going to spend and what you said about how much that could change women's rugby, local grass rugby, that amount of money, I do think it's silly to do it, but I fully understand why they had to. They don't want the complete battering that they're probably getting from public. Yeah. Saying they don't want to watch this England team. You know, it got Andy Robinson fired booing back in 2006 or whatever it was.
Argentina, wasn't it? Lost at home.
You know, it's the worst feeling in the world for any players. Now, whether all the players love him or not, it's the look is what, and he lost the look. Now, you can say he put himself out there enough. That's his biggest job, is to make, you know, I know there's a feud going on with Clive, and I don't think Clive is right all the time, but you still have to be able to manage all those things. And if one got out of control, which we've had that discussion with the press before that we did about Spinks, so that's long going, why do they dislike him? And I don't think he's ever gone out there and specifically gone to get that relationship back. Yep. And ultimately, they then can print their own narrative, and that will affect the public that are watching, and then that puts a lot of pressure on the RFU to make the decision that they made. So I understand why he's gone. I don't necessarily agree with it, because I could see him going around. It's a real dividing of, you know, he's really split people. I think he's a great guy. Whenever we interview him, he's way more open than you ever see, I think. And it's a shame, because now all we're not going to talk about is, plus for the RFU now, if we go and win, everyone will say, well, Eddie's blueprint was all over it. If we go win the World Cup, or we go win the Six Nations, if we lose, so we shouldn't have changed him.
Yeah.
So he's actually in a pretty good position, Eddie Jones, in terms of leaving. But no, I understand why they've done it. And I think the only thing Eddie hasn't done is probably swallowed a bit of pride and actually gone, right, let's fix this problem, because let me talk you through and explain, even if it's on a private one-to-one with whoever is closest to, and ask them, look, can you understand? Because I think that's what he's lost, and that's ultimately why he's gone. I don't think it's because of how good a coach he is.
Okay, there's lots to unpack there. We'll go through some of this in a bit more detail as we sort of round up. I know the conversation and the story has moved on quite a lot, but I think it is worth reflecting, and it's nice to have him back, because he offers a very contrary point to the two of us. Before we get sort of into the nuance of it, do you think Eddie Jones, and a lot of what's sort of come out recently, is that he did pick a battle with the media, said in the aftermath of the Argentina game, I think it was, I don't care what you think. There was the challenge, I think, around rugby, what was it, Six Nations, one of the games, where he said, the game's moved on to all the journos, let me take you on a journey with us. Did he pick a battle with the media and lose it? And did that noise on the other side of the fence, how much did that contribute in the end to the decision that Bill Sweeney had to make?
Yes, 100%. You never win with the media. And I understand Mike's point. I disagree a little bit about the media thing, just because I saw Stuart Lancaster invited them in, cozy little afternoon teas, biscuits. You know, there was an issue with the scrum. You got Graham Rowntree showing all the journalists how the scrum works and what's actually happening. They all came in, all took the tea and biscuits, all best of friends as ever they are. And as soon as it went wrong, they knifed them anyway. I think from a perspective of business, there is no point in picking a fight with the media, because you'll never win.
Yeah.
Equally, I think you have to tread a finer line than Eddie did, because unfortunately, you have to give them. So I always did. I have my view on the media. They're unnecessary either. I will always give them everything they want. I will always talk to them. Some of them I like, some of them I don't like. It is part of life. If you try to swim upstream, you're going to get fucked. If you try to swim with it, you're going to get fucked. It's your choice of how well you toe the party line. And I think, unfortunately, at times, Eddie probably went too hard, didn't address it, didn't realise it was a necessary evil. I think, you know, he tried to take a lot of the responsibility himself, to deflect away from the players, but unfortunately that became a repetitive narrative that everyone ran with, and it was like Eddie's just, you know, just trying to accept responsibility to clean house, and as if that's going to be enough. But I think unfortunately he didn't probably play that game, you know, because you're never going to win, and actually what will happen is, normally it happens in a final denouement. So if they'd gone and lost the World Cup or some sort of scandal or something happened, they then blow you all up, full stop. This was a slow death by you know, 1,000 cuts, unfortunately. And because he didn't toe the party line as much as he should have done, they then incited the media. And because he is a derisive character anyway, he is a non-conformist character, which I know all about, right? People, you know, in sport, especially in sporting world, is littered with personalities and people that the fans think they want.
Yeah.
So they think they want a vanilla bloke that's very accommodating and everything else and toes the pipeline, very honest, but they don't have any interest. When you've got an edgy character that creates interest and creates a narrative, you want it, you want to see that, everyone buys into it, but equally you want to see a downfall. And because he didn't get that right, the media hype, media went with him, changed the narrative. And unfortunately, you know, I've spoken at a dinner every single day or lunch, every single day for the last 3 weeks. And everyone wants to know the same question, but the opinion and questions I get asked about the England team, about rugby in general, about stuff, they're just not informed enough, because everybody bases what they see from the media, what the likes of Clive Woodward writes, what these other people write, and they just don't have the facts, and they're always so shocked to hear a completely alternative reality. And so the media create that story, and the fans buy into it, and then you know, opinion pieces dictate opinion. Our whole lives are driven by what you see on media and television, and that's why it's so coercive. It takes an intelligent person to actually look and shop in different areas and go, what is the truth here?
But it is a bit of language. It is just the smallest bit of language. You know, even Pemby said the on the podcast, how's he doing now? Oh, he won't care. He'll just get on and move on. That's not the right thing for him to be putting out about Eddie, because everyone goes, well,
he also made a particular point of saying he's very grateful to all of the players for the honour of coaching England.
But again, that's not what they're going to report.
Tins is right. The language is bad. Like, we're not, you know, like, I joked a million times about not watching rugby when I do, and that's become a narrative.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't watch, so you don't know what you're talking. And the thing is, you've got to show you care, because like on the jungle with Mike, we were talking about in the car on the way here. Someone like Owen, for example, the British media want something simple, somebody sweet, somebody who's grateful to be there, somebody appreciates it, no edges, no nothing. And you've got to show you care. It's almost an act. Everything in life, especially in the public eye, is an act. Be seen to be the right thing at the right time, say the right thing and feed it. And if you go against and swim upstream, like I said, you're just going to get screwed saying, I don't care, or I don't watch, or I'm not interested. It's as inflammatory as... Because if you cry too much, people get upset. You've got it's such a fine line. It's an art. It's a constant act. And if you let it slip, you're fine.
But then you look on. I looked on LinkedIn this morning, and he went and spent 2 hours with a junior rugby club,
Barnsdale RFC,
on his own thing. So
2 days after,
why didn't we sit? That's the problem. I know he did
but
that a lot because he's obsessed. Yeah,
exactly.
But then that gets lost, and this is the whole problem, where the media expect to be lauded for what they do, which I think is wrong. They do. They think they're special because they get to write about it sometimes. I think they feel privileged that you should bow down to them because they can dictate where you go, which ended up has probably manifested itself. But why isn't there more of him when he goes out to do that?
Yeah.
They'll quickly jump on when he said the derogatory thing about Wales or whatever it was.
Because that doesn't, people don't click to see that Eddie Jones has gone to...
Well, that is the problem.
The biggest thing with any of this stuff is always trying to... So explain to people, and what I try to do with the show is there's many more sides to the story, and there is much more depth to it. And you know, you're right, you hit the nail on the head. Sensationalist things and negativity is what makes the world go round. It does. If something bad happens to you, you tell 20 people. Something good happens to you, you tell 5. It's the fact of the matter is. But Eddie has always recorded personal videos for people, like sick kids, gone and visited schools, gone out of his way to do interviews, gone out of his way to do stuff, and is a really personable, friendly guy who wants to do it. But when you sit at that game with those blokes, some of them have played sport, some of them haven't, some of them are toxic, some of them, bear in mind, some of them watch the game and send their reviews in by half time, and that the score's out of 10 because they've got to go to print. So they don't get the full big picture. There's a whole load of stuff that people don't realise. A lot of these people, they don't have as control. It's not as simple as that. Like, for example, if I walk out here and I got photographed, people go, why have you paid for a photographer to photograph? It's like, why the fuck would I? Why would I? It doesn't, like, sometimes you would if you're doing a photo shoot for Hello, but just the concept of how the public understand how the media works is so far adrift from reality. And so, I just think there's always going to be two sides. And on the whole, I think Eddie was a very good man. But I think when you walk into that post press conference, England have lost to Argentina and the knives are out, what do you expect? How do you think you're going to do it? Like, if I was interviewed, I get prickly when people ask me stupid questions, you know, but how do you expect a bloke who's a proud, competitive man who knows his team haven't played well on a particular day, how do you want him to react, to get bombarded with cretinous question after cretinous, after aggressive question, for him to be like, bare his soul and go, yeah, Owen Farrell was crap, yeah, oh, Mark Smith was shit. What? There's no win or lose. There's nowhere to go. You could have done it better. Because if you challenge everything and fight everybody, you're going to lose. You're fighting too many battles on too many fronts. And I think, unfortunately, it did contribute to his downfall.
I just very quickly want to explain what we tried to do last week. And I don't want to spend too much longer talking about Eddie and the media, because I think the story has definitely
moved on. Someone said in the first post after we did that, stop apologising for stuff, just stay what you want to do.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. But I do want to just explain, which is that last week, because there were so many stories breaking so quickly, what we tried to do was a series of mini pods to try and keep up with the stories as they happen. So on the Tuesday, obviously Wayne Pivat was removed, Warren Gatland came straight in, and so we spoke to Jamie Roberts, who was, you know, the kingpin of Gatland's glory years. The following day, we were expecting Eddie Jones to get the sack. These things are sort of briefed to the media, and I think once the media have said he is going, you can bet your bottom dollar that that's come from within the walls. The reason that we spoke to David Pembroke was because, in the interest of balance, we were trying to put across the view of someone who very much supported Eddie. You are a huge fan, having played underneath him at all. There was a lot of stuff. It got very personal. There was a lot of anger out there. And so we tried to get the voice of someone who knew Eddie extremely well to sort of give us the inside track on where Eddie was and, you know, how he'd be feeling about all of this. As that interview took place, David Pembroke, and I'm sort of going behind the scenes here a little bit, was extremely critical of specific individuals within the media. Now, he named them. He was very, very accusatory about the role that they had played in Eddie Jones' downfall. And as we did that show, and as Eddie Jones messaged to say he got the sack, we were thinking, crikey, there's going to be a right of reply here. And we messaged at the time, or indicated at the time, that we would try and get to one of those journalists. We finished the interview with David Pembroke. We contacted two of the journalists' names. One said, no, thank you. One said, yes, I'd love to chat. And the reason I'm telling you this is the intention was to do the alternative side of the story, the one that everyone was reading about in the papers. Lots of people had lots to say about the fact we only had one side of it. We went to the journo. He said, yes, I'll do it. We went to the news desk of said newspaper and said, we'd like to do this. Is there anything else official you'd like to put in? Suddenly the lawyers got involved.
Yeah.
And so several hours of negotiation, and eventually we have a lot of experience with lawsuits. Christmas is around the corner. We took out the chunky stuff and said, you know what? We're not here to start fires. And as a result, we ate up the whole of the day trying to get this second part of the opinion away. We couldn't get it done, and then the story moves on. So, yes, we only presented one side of the story. There is a reason that we only presented one side of the story. And I think what we're trying to do here is give a balanced view from you and just sort of reflect a week on what is the biggest story.
It is funny, though, isn't it, that out of everybody, the people who write about stuff are very often not held accountable in any way, shape, or form. I find that the most amazing part. Because if people write stuff about you, and it isn't true, you don't like it, you can challenge them and you might get an apology. It might be on like page 37.
It'll cost you 10 grand.
Cost you 10 grand to do it. And ultimately, you never really win. You never get the cash back. You know, it sort of never really happens. But then,
but if you don't challenge it, then they'll continue to regurgitate that story for years and years and years.
Yeah, so everything I've ever done of all the multiple scandals that I've had, every time, it depends, they've got such a Santa's sack of things to pull out on me. That it varies. You know, James Haskell known for this, James Haskell known for that. But what I always thought about interesting is when they get it wrong or you want to challenge it, they've moved on to the next article. They genuinely don't care. But they are quite sensitive because they're all humans. So they do get a bit sensitive because we know sometimes I slag them off in here and they get a bit sensitive. But I use the media as much as anyone, and I appreciate it as a thing. It's never personal, but it is interesting you ask them to come on and talk and they can't. They can't do it.
The individual was keen, but I think that the bigger organisation said, no, thank you, we won't. I think you're trying to sum up and probably put, sadly, the Eddie Jones story to bed. You believe it was the wrong decision because you have played under him and you believe that he could have turned it around. He's a World Cup specialist and he would have got England fit and firing with a four-month lead into Rugby World Cup.
I didn't see any... I know because I don't really look for it or see it. I didn't see any like criticism or stuff. People always say it's because I love Eddie. You know, if I was still playing for him, I could understand. There's no benefit to me talking him up in any way, shape or form. If you read any one of my book, you'll know that I am quite equal in terms of what I say about coach. I said, this is why I believe they went wrong and this is why I personally believe I went wrong. This is both sides, but I believe this to be truth. Within Eddie's situation, I just got a good experience of him. Of an environment where he understood how to win and it was so markedly different to 90% of the stuff I'd faced in rugby that I thought it was quite unique. And I know talking to the players, they feel the same way.
Yeah.
So a passing comment about something that you're not involved in, I'm basing it on how he reacts to the media and basically because you don't see the result on the field, I think is a bit silly. But again, I'm not lost any sleep over it. It doesn't really bother me. I think it's just a shame because 9 months out, you know, the guy has a 90% win record at World Cups. If anyone could do it, Eddie could have done it.
So we'll come back to where will England go from here. But you mentioned the players, and it's interesting because I think everyone was waiting to see what would come out once Eddie had gone. Owen Farrell, he's played a big part in my career for some time, so naturally it's obviously disappointing because it's everybody's job that's got him that in the first place. Eddie's always been a big part of my career and a brilliant coach for me. I will always be massively thankful to him. I don't think we're hugely surprised that Owen Farrell is a big backer. He goes on to say, been around a while now, not been around too many changes, both at club and international level. It's not pleasant to go through. I don't think it's come from the players. There's obviously stuff we want to get better at from all the results, but as players, you look at yourself and see what you can do. Jack Van Portfleet said, Eddie helped me back myself, giving me that confidence and painting pictures for me to change my mindset on it. He was really helpful in letting me turn it around and see it as a positive. That was actually specifically off the back of the All Black game. Danny Kerr, who had a pretty tumultuous time with Eddie Jones, said that he'd messaged him and said, thanks for everything. And I suppose the only guy who you could possibly put into the flip side was Zach Mercer, who said, for Eddie, it was time to move on. England should be the best in the world. And Zach Mercer obviously had a little bit of game time under him and then went to Montpellier. The reason I mention that is we haven't had this massive fallout that sometimes you might expect if it's driven by
and
the
everyone
players.
But then that's the narrative. Everyone brought up the five or six players who had a bad experience. How many players has he used?
Yeah.
And to have five or six. And even they sort of put Dylan in there. But Dylan owes his whole career to Eddie.
But some of the best days of.
But he said he also broke it because of how much he pushed him. But that's not a bad thing. You've got 95 caps for your country and you captain 50 of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Dylan's had a pretty good career. I think there's only a couple of people who've probably had a really bad experience, and that, you know, that's where Hask is valuable because he's actually lived it. He's seen it. He's ripped the shit out of Hask numerous times, but that's what Hask wants. Yeah. You know, some people don't want that, and you know whether he manages that both sides. But I think unfortunately the autumn series has always got him back because he's had such a great record.
Yeah,
and you know, not having that after a poor Six Nations and how he's portrayed as not caring about the Six Nations puts you in a really difficult position with the fans. And RFU will more react to the fans than they will to the media.
So I think you're absolutely bang on. And I think the reason we've been talking about the media in this is that once that volume gets to a certain level, there is no way back. You cannot turn that tide. And you said last week on the show, what the RFU should have done is just say, fuck off, we're going with Eddie Jones to Rugby World Cup. I can see why it is very, very difficult to do that if you've got 82,000 discontent fans walking out in the last game of the year.
Here's another point just to balance it out with Eddie, because I understand why he's been sacked. Now, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, I understand as well.
I can see on
then if you
look,
if you go
alone,
back on these results, whatever they are, 53 games, 11 losses. After that 18-game winning streak, he lost 7 on the bounce. And he always said in that he was preparing for short turnarounds for the Rugby World Cup 2019. And then he goes and takes us to the final. Yeah. I think he got it wrong in the preparation to the final. So how is that different to what he's just done over this sort of year? Why can't I do the same again?
Well, 2018, it was played 12, won 6, lost 6. 2022, which is what we're in, it's played 12, won 5, drawn 1, lost 6. So you're a point away from played 6, won 6.
So, you know, and he always delivers when he needs to.
Yeah.
But my biggest issue is the fact that I don't think we're creating enough at the moment.
So you can see why that changes a bit. Let's come back to where do England go from here, because I think that's going to be very interesting. The point I wanted to make, you back him as a player and someone who is a World Cup specialist and having played under him. I just think it's a curious decision to make at this point. And it's about the fact that it's 9 months out from the Rugby World Cup. And because I'm a bore, I went through some of the numbers. So Eddie Jones, Telegraph are saying a £1 million payoff. The coaches will probably, if they go, will get, you know, another £1 million between them. To bring in Steve Borthwick and the coaches that he wants, the Telegraph are saying it'll be 2 million. Stephen Jones in the Sunday Times was saying it could be up to 5 million. I'd be amazed if it's that, but let's say it's 2 million. So it's going to cost 4 million quid to change the top of the tree at the moment. Steve Borthwick, I understand, was already signed from June. So he was already coming in for that World Cup camp. So essentially you are buying his way in. That money is going into getting him in for the Six Nations, which still isn't even confirmed. Even if he does come in for the Six Nations, it's highly unlikely he's going to be able to get all of his coaches. And therefore next year's Six Nations will be Steve Borthwick, hybrid coaches that he hasn't necessarily chosen, one or two that he might have done. It just feels like, what are we doing here? This is incredibly disruptive. Obviously, they will then hopefully have 4 warm-up games going into the World Cup with the coaching staff that Steve Borthwick has chosen himself. I don't think that gives you a huge amount of time. I think the flip side of that is, what could you have done with that money? We were sort of touching on this last week, but the game is on the precipice of financial ruin. And actually, I went to have a look at what return do you get on that $4 million. So for going to the Rugby World Cup, you get £150,000. So even if England don't get out of the group, they get 150 grand. Okay, you're not eating into very much of that 4 million. If you make the quarters, you get 200, so an extra 50. And if you make the semis, you get 250. So England would highly likely have made the quarters under Eddie Jones, even if he was coaching badly, because of the pool that they're in. So probably you're looking at a 50k return if Steve gets them to the semi-finals, which Eddie might have done anyway. And what I'm saying is, basically, there's a negligible financial return on the 4 million that you've invested in changing your coaching team at this point. Then you have a little look at what you might have done with the money. So the RFU Championship, get 250 grand per club from the RFU. Bear with me. Is this too much?
No, carry on. No, it's right. Carry on.
I think one or two of you out there might be very interested in there. For the one or two of you, I'm going to keep going. RFU Championships, get 250 grand per club. You take that 4 million and you put them across the 12 clubs. They get an additional 333 grand. Hello? Hello?
Anyone still there?
It's good to be back.
Turn the lights on. Basically,
I think from a business point of view, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You could have put it into the England, Wales, Scotland composite sevens. You could have put it into grassroots support funds.
Give it to us.
You could have put
it into
Bucks Super Rugby. You could have put it into the Premier 15s. At a point where the game is desperate for cash, putting 4 million into spinning the wheel on your coaching ticket, not necessarily being able to land on the ideal setup for the Six Nations, I think is a very curious decision.
The best thing is...
I'm going to keep boring you. You've also got rid of the man who's invested 7 years in English rugby and potentially is about to be picked up by Australian rugby, who England are likely to meet in the
quarterfinals. With a non-compete clause.
Excellent.
I mean, it's mental. I did say that. It's too little, too late.
Thank you for persevering, if you're still with us at this point of the show.
It's too little, too late. You know, they either had to the last time there was a big outcry, you know, put the stake in the ground and say he's going to back us, stop asking questions, we're not going to change it under any circumstances. But, you know, I don't think they wanted to give him that much power. And they have done that, and they've changed it. But the thing that everyone is forgetting is that England are not that far away, because it's just a few percentages the right way. Ellis came on and said, I mean, the best bit is, everyone poo-poos me. Right? You've got Ellis Genge, and everyone goes, well, Ellis isn't going to slag him off. Okay, yes, he's not a moron. Again, we're talking about playing the political game. Like, you've got to do that. But equally, no one else has come out and said that, you know? And I don't really get it. And I just think, people should just back England, just focus on cheering and get off social media and just relax. Because it's done now. So we'll just move on and cheer for England and hope they win the World Cup. And if they don't, doesn't make any difference anyway.
It's the hope that kills you. We saw that in the football at the weekend. Are you optimistic for England under Steve Borthwick? Do you think it'll be a massive overhaul of what the team are trying to do, or do you think it's refinery?
I don't think so. The difficulty of this is you don't generally know what the players think. Only they know, and they know how close they were. I think they've got an honest group of players, so I think they know where they're missing out.
Do you think they've got a world-class group of players?
I think they've got a very exciting group of players. I don't feel we're seeing that on the field at the moment, for whatever reasons. Now, whether there is a bigger plan, he always had things that he's working on. But I think we've got a great group of players out there to go to a World Cup with. If we have everyone fit and on form and fresh, I think we've got a great group of players. You know, and we're on the right side of the draw. So I don't see an issue of why we can't go and take on anyone.
Fingers crossed. So, what we have tried to do, this is probably a show that's come 5 days too late, is just offer, I think, the element of balance that we were trying to. You supported him because you played under him and you backed him to come back. I thought it was a curious business decision, although I can see why the results dictated that he had to go. And you can see exactly the same. The results weren't good enough, and therefore the change was made once the noise got as loud as it did. So, we are a pod, we're a hobby. We try to do the best we can. Sometimes it's fun.
We're a pobby.
Complete the sentence. In 2023, English rugby will
be better.
In 2023, English rugby will
be amazing.
Great. Well, there's two positive sentiments on which to end this week's breakdown. Fingers crossed. As always, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We do try to occupy the middle ground. We don't always get it right, but we've had a lot of fun trying. Well done, Eddie. Onwards for him, possibly to Australia. And let's all watch and wait and see what happens with Steve Borthwick taking the reins. We're back tomorrow with a very special episode with the one and only Wayne Barnes. It's an absolute ripper. Tune in then. But until then, from all of us, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. I hope you enjoyed it. But if you didn't, well, you didn't pay anything for it. So what exactly is your problem?
Hello? Hello?
Oh, it's good to be back.
Turn the lights on after you leave, Alex.